Hey, Rob Bradford here. You guys know I'm always up for a good MVP story, and one of the best stories is Wasabi Technology. Wasabi is the world's hottest cloud storage company, and it's become the go-to provider for professional and collegiate sports teams, including 20 Major League Baseball teams like the Red Sox and NHL teams like the Bruins and Vancouver Canucks. Even the Liverpool Football Club is getting in on the Wasabi action. So why is Wasabi the MVP? Well, Wasabi was purpose-built to free businesses from skyrocketing storage costs and unpredictable transaction fees that the Amazons of the world are charging. In fact, Wasabi is up to 80% less than those hyperscalers and doesn't charge a cent for businesses to access their data. From Wasabi's AI-enabled intelligent media storage, Wasabi Air, to the industry's only cloud storage service with triple protection against cyber criminals, data deletion, and ransomware, Wasabi's taking the lead in driving innovation in data storage and helping sports teams to unleash the power of their data. Wasabi, another Boston-based championship team.
Diamondbacks baseball.
And he corks one way back, and it is gone.
The D-backs BP show.
Fly ball to left, hit pretty well by Lamb at the wall. It's gone.
Diamondbacks radio network.
There's a shot to center field. Parr on the run. Can't get it. He gets by him. All the way to the wall. Bounces more towards center. Marte turns second. He heads for third. Tony Parachica's racing into the plate. Here comes the throw. It's high. He is safe.
D-backs BP show.
It is our final weekly GabFest ahead of the 2020 season, which is set to start in a mere 72 hours. Actually, that's 72 hours and 10 minutes. The D-backs will take on the San Diego Padres at Petco Park in San Diego as Madison Bumgarner will make his D-backs debut against Chris Paddock for San Diego. Welcome to the BP show. Our producer-engineer is Leo Gilmartin, our technical director, Luke Robbins, with the television voice of the Diamondbacks, Steve Berthiaume. I'm Mike Farron. But it's a little dusty in this office. I'm not gonna lie. It's just an emotional.
I'm a little verklempt. Talk amongst yourselves.
I don't know if I'll be able to get through the entire hour. I just don't know. I'm not making any promises.
It sounds like you might not be able to too. I'm beginning to think that might actually be the case that you won't be able to make it through the hour, Leo. What's really funny about this is that actually funny. Is that a week from Thursday we'll be back at this again, because for every home game this year, the three of us, and for most of them Luke will be there as well, we'll be doing the BP show before Diamondbacks games, providing you with expert analysis and commentary.
If only those finger quotes could show up on radio.
Does that not work in this medium, Bert?
You never know. On the TV side, it does.
Oh, that's good. Well, we are here, and we nearly were just two of us tonight, because sources have confirmed to the D-backs program that our producer-engineer Leo Gilmartin was adamant about Steve making sure that he had equipment to do the show from home tonight, Leo may have.
I told you that in confidence, first of all.
I didn't say it. I heard it from you. I heard it from a source.
I always take care of the talent. Always take care of the talent first.
That is rule number one, as we know. Leo did an excellent job making sure, Mike, I had all my stuff to take from the ballpark last night back home to do this show. Then, apparently, he somewhat absentmindedly forgot to take his own stuff back home and left without it.
I did consider, yeah, maybe I won't do the show tonight.
Well, you can't not do the last show, because everybody gets mad at finales. They hated the Seinfeld finale. They didn't like the way Game of Thrones ended. We can't have people upset about the way this show ended.
Well, imagine the uproar.
The MASH finale was great. The Newhart finale was fantastic. At the end of this, Leo is going to wake up next to Suzanne Plachette. That's exactly what's going to happen. And, our younger audience clearly gets that. Right.
Yeah. Although
Mary Tyler Moore actually pretty good, as long as we're going with the old references. Mary Tyler Moore show was pretty good.
Chuckles the Clown, your thoughts. I'm very excited about, and I've asked our crack staff, Luke, our ace producer, to get the Dueling Banjos theme song ready, because I've been looking forward to this for a while. It is one of our guests who does a tremendous Mike Farron imitation. At some point in the hour, we will have Dueling Farrons.
Ryan Spielborg's will help us preview the Colorado Rockies. He's a former outfielder for the Colorado. The notes here say that he's a former outfielder for the Colorado Rockies and current television broadcaster for them, as well as a colleague of mine on SiriusXM's MLB Network Radio. Tim Brown from Yahoo is going to join us in about 10 minutes. Love Tim, one of the best national baseball writers, and fortunate that he's based on the West Coast. So we'll have pretty good feeling what's going on in the Western divisions as well. I will say the last two nights weren't a whole lot of fun at Dodger Stadium.
Now, come on. Don't be negative.
I'm not trying to be negative. I'm trying to be realistic about the fact that they were two lousy nights. Now, fortunately, the games don't count. At least at last check, they didn't count, right?
Dodgers may want to find a way to make them count after outscoring the Diamondbacks 21-3 in those two games. There wasn't a lot to take away from it. Wasn't a lot of good to take away from it. You just kind of hopefully sweep it under the rug and move on.
You sweep it under the rug, or do you want to address
No, what do you got? I'm looking for bright spots other than the Marte and Vargas homers. Guerra looked very good. I still continue to like what I see out of Jeremy Beasley. I think he can contribute. Got a very live arm. That seems to be about it.
Rondon was pretty good yesterday. You said
Guerra,
right? Yeah. So, I mean, those are a couple of things I think that were certainly worth discussing. Jake Lamb having a double off a lefty yesterday, that's certainly a good sign. I mean, especially with at worst uncertainty about the status of Christian Walker to start the season. Although Kevin Crone had rejoined the team yesterday, Walker I think is going to be in San Diego. He's likely to be ready for opening day, but I do think that that's at least encouraging. Jake hasn't had many opportunities bird against lefties, so
no question. And I don't think you make too much about giving up all the runs with Taylor Widener and Taylor Clark, the two starting pitchers. Obviously they're not in the rotation to start the regular season, so this was far from normal circumstances. The thing that's a little disconcerting is the lack of offense overall by just about everybody in there, with the occasional hit here or there. That, to me, Mike, was the most distressing part of those two games.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's distressing in that they didn't perform well against a really good L.A. lineup. I think Torrey made the point. For both guys, they were guys that were pitching in that situation for the first time. First time at Dodger Stadium, second time ever for Widener on a mound like that. Not for Clark. I shouldn't say that. Clark has pitched in that before. But the top of the Los Angeles lineup is pretty good. Well, I mean, those top five guys are potential MVP candidates.
Obviously, Widener was a little nervous, had trouble finding the strike zone, got in trouble with the bases on balls in his first inning. I still think that, he could have, last night, Taylor Clark had an 11 or 12 pitch 1-2-3 first. He had two strikes and two outs on Turner. It turned into, what was it, a 12 or 13 pitch at bat. Then it took forever to get Bellinger retired after Turner had doubled. I think those two at bats with two outs in the first just kind of wore Taylor Clark down, maybe mentally more so than anything else, and he never really did recover from those two at-bats in the first.
Yeah.
So I think that kind of skewed his performance is my point.
Yeah, I think so too. But I do think that the bigger point with Taylor Clark is that one of the things we're still waiting to see for him is finding a consistent way for him to put away hitters quickly. And,
yes.
I was a little bit surprised in the Turner at-bat. I don't want to get too granular in here, but it was a lot of fastballs in that at-bat, and it was still early in the game, and maybe they're not trying to show too much, but the numbers on Clark's slider last year were really good against right-handed hitters, and it didn't seem like he was willing to go to that pitch to try and get the chase. Now, Turner is difficult to strike out. That's one of the reasons why the Dodgers lineup is so good, is that they all hit for power and they put the ball in play. But I was a little bit surprised by that, and one of the things when Clark looked like he turned a corner in the second half last year was when he made an adjustment with that pitch and was basically told, listen, just grab it and throw it. Like, just throw the heck out of it. Do the old what's the old Steve Carlton line about how do you throw your slider? He said, I hold it like this and I throw the blank out of it, right? Like, that was kind of the plan for Clark, and we've seen the slider be really good. It just didn't seem like he didn't have a feel for the pitch last night, didn't have the pitch last night, or they were working on some other things in terms of using the changeup against lefties and trying to establish the curveball more.
And those guys are not quite on the same level in terms of the development, I don't think. Obviously, Taylor Widener has never pitched in the big leagues. Taylor Clark has. So where if it's Widener, you're just looking for some sort of sense of, all right, how does he do in the scenario? With Clark, I think you are in that situation where you can try and develop a few pitches.
Right. From a technical standpoint, I mean, I think many people know that none of the broadcasters are traveling this year, that they will be doing – you guys did the games both on the TV side and on beloved radio from Chase Field the last 2 days. How did it go? How was it?
Leo, what do you think?
Actually, I thought it went remarkably well. There's a lot of people, as Steve, you said last night, that put a lot of work into making this at least attainable. And I thought it went really well. I thought it sounded clean on the radio side. It looked good from the TV side. Obviously, we're relying heavily on the TV feed. So personally, from my standpoint, I think it went really well. It's still not, you know, it doesn't replace being there and the things you get to see and hear. But all things considered, where we were 3 months ago to where we are now, I'm all in. I thought it was good.
Yeah, I think, Mike, from the television standpoint, you just sort of have the philosophy that, all right, we're not going to pretend like this isn't different. Let's not complain about it. Let's not make a big deal out of it. But let's try and have some fun with it and acknowledge the situation. And I think Bob and I and our whole Fox Sports Arizona crew managed to do that and will continue to do that. We can't say enough about the work that Scott Guyer and Steve Silvertooth over at Chase Field and all the folks, Brian Moss, Jeff Gowen, the folks at Fox Sports Arizona, Craig Ritchie, Brian Hogan. It is an enormous task to get this on the air, and people will have no idea the miles and miles of cable that has been laid to get all these monitors hooked up and the coordination with the truck at Dodger Stadium and the folks from Sportsnet LA out there that helped us out and gave us actually two cameras that we could control from the ballpark instead of one. Everybody is really pitching in to help everybody else out, and it is a tremendous effort by everybody over there. And it's a little different. There are times when you're it's weird because you've got a monitor full of baseball in front of you, and behind the monitors, because Bob and I are in our booth, is a pitch dark Chase Field. There's no one in the ballpark except the broadcasters. So it's a very odd sensation that way. And you know, from the center field camera, you can't see if a runner on first takes off for second, and it's hard to see, say, for instance, a runner rounding third. Is he going to stop at third? He's going to come home when you're watching on a monitor because you might not be able to see it. Other than that, I tend to agree with Leo. It's all about the end product. What does it look like? What does it sound like? And I think those guys, through all their efforts, gave us an A-plus performance so far.
You know, generally, I sync up the radio with the TV. No offense, Bird.
It's yeah, that's okay. Sure,
side.
Yeah, yeah. I won't take that personally at all.
It's about Bob. But the
Boise, hello.
But I was listening on just the radio for a while on Sunday night, and for about a 10 or 15 minute stretch while I was doing that, just working, because I'm actually working out of the house. I'm not working with you guys at the ballpark.
Yeah, that was by our request.
Yes, I know. But grateful I am to not be around you as well. It's bad enough I have to see you right now.
You could use the break.
But listening to it on the radio, you could convince yourself, or you could get lost in it, right? You could get the distraction that you're looking for. You know, as we have the president saying today, you know, the pandemic is likely to get worse before it gets better across the country, and we're looking for distractions. For that 15 minutes or so, I was locked in on a baseball game on the radio, the crowd noise, you know, the fake crowd noise. I know there's been a lot about, but like it sounded normal. It sounded like normal, and you could forget for at least a small chunk of time what was going on around you that had led to this point.
It was funny. I was doing some other work on the side, and, you know, I'll listen a lot. There were times I'd hear the bat crack, and I'd flinch, thinking
the
ball
was a
player could be coming back. I just flinched because, like you said, if you're doing if you're not just staring at the screen, you can forget. And I forgot several times. I flinched. There was a few times that I flinched, and I'm usually not that skittish.
I just would say that, Leo, the stadium was dark and there was no one there. Maybe you want to get the cataracts checked before.
That's two for flinching. You know,
bruised.
I'm really tired of hearing the phrase the new normal, because none of this is normal. These are extraordinary circumstances in our history. So I think we get carried away with, oh, this is the new normal. It's not the new normal. But anytime we can get a little piece of normal back, and that's baseball, on, as you said, in the background, I think it does wonders for everybody, ourselves certainly included. So we're happy to go to all that extra effort to bring D-backs fans some of these bowl games.
You know, we are going to lift everyone's collective spirits in just a little while when we visit with Tim Brown from Yahoo Sports, and then we'll bring everybody back down when we have Ryan Spielborgs from the Rockies Television.
Looking forward to that.
That's all still to come here on the D-backs BP show.
Diamondbacks baseball. Diamondbacks baseball. This is the Diamondbacks BP Show. Diamondbacks Radio Network.
closing in on the opener. In fact, on Thursday night, Major League Baseball will start with the New York Yankees at the Washington Nationals and the Dodgers and Giants playing. And one of the best national baseball writers in the country, we are fortunate to have on this side of the country. He is the great Tim Brown from Yahoo Sports, who is kind enough to spend some time with us this evening. Tim, Mike Farron, Steve Berthume, Leo Gilmartin, how are you? Everybody happy and safe in your world?
Fellas, so far so good. How are you all?
Doing good, Tim. Thanks for doing this.
Oh, my pleasure. Anytime.
I'm just kind of curious now that we're almost there, right? We've almost made it to opening day. what are just kind of some of your thoughts in general, specifically on what maybe you've seen over the course of the last week as we've gotten into televised intra-squads and actual exhibition games?
You know, I think my first thought is I wasn't absolutely sure this was going to work Friday when the latest test results came through and we saw that the percentages had stayed relatively low. And then I started thinking, it might be okay to be optimistic now. It seems like the plan getting to opening day was going to work. Now, you know, players in droves are about to get on buses and into airplanes and into hotels and things like that. And that creates a whole another set of things. I'll be honest with you. Until just the last couple of nights, watching a little bit of the Diamondbacks, watching some Dodgers, watching a little Angels and Padres, it didn't really seem real. And maybe that's a result of the past 4 or 5 months we've all lived. And it just seemed like such a huge mountain to climb to get to this day. Not just the virus, but the labor negotiations and then what would come of the test results. And I think I'm just now starting to settle into the fact that they're going to play baseball. It's going to be real baseball. And now I'm just now getting curious about, like, what do teams look like? What's it going to take to be good at this thing, right?
Tim, is there one particular characteristic that teams need to adapt under these extreme circumstances to be good at this thing?
You know, I think that whatever it is, the 30-man roster is certainly going to help. I mean, if you can't, like, have all elements covered with 30 guys in or near or around the dugout, you probably don't have a chance. But, I don't think – for me, the pitching element doesn't change. You still are going to have to pitch your way into late October. And I think because of the challenge that's ahead, the physical challenge of basically having a 3-week ramp-up to top speed and the psychological challenge of just showing up every day and operating, full bore into the teeth of this pandemic and into the season, all the medical checks, the daily choices and things like that. I think that it's just going to be who can pitch, who can get lucky, who as a group accepts this experience for what it is. And I think that's going to be a really critical thing about, like, the leadership of these 30 teams and not just the managers, but the coaching staffs and who gets their guys to buy into whatever this is going to be, and it's going to get worse. It's just in terms of lifestyle, it's one thing to show up, to a little summer camp every day for 3 weeks. I think it's another thing to get out in the world and make this really a sacrifice to play this game.
Obviously in a shortened season, the health is always important. First of all, in a shortened season, it's going to be even more heightened, including COVID. What are some teams early on that might have some injury concerns that are worth noting at this point?
I think right out of the gate, you have, for example, the Braves lose Freddie Freeman. And I think that felt like a big deal. I know he's back on the field, but that felt important. To me, Yankees lose a guy like Chapman. That feels important. But, you know, I do think that everybody's going to have these things. You know, and I think that if you're going to, like, engage with this season, you're going to have to accept that things are going to get weird, that that guys are going to come and go, that superstars are going to come and go. And, you know, it's just going to be at the end, I think you're going to have to look back and decide what was important and what was not important. I've seen other writers try to compare this to random 60-game stretches here and there, or halves of seasons, or strike seasons. I don't think you can pair what's about to happen with anything that's ever come before. And so it's sort of hard to gauge, right? I mean, who's you're going to be waiting on second negative tests for cleanup hitters and ace pitchers. You know, some really, really good baseball player is going to hit 140 this season. And some guy that maybe you've hardly ever heard of is going to hit 390. It's just how it's going to happen. So just to answer your question, I think that, you know, everybody's got a little something here and there. And I think that, you know, I was just watching the Angel pregame, and Julio Teheran is behind because he had the virus. And so it just leads you to believe that, you know, there's going to be a lot of moving parts. And I think it's really tough to gauge right now.
Tim Brown from Yahoo Sports with us here on the D-backs BP show. Tim, let's look at the National League West just for a few moments here. I mean, obviously, that's where our focus is. We saw the Los Angeles lineup the last two nights. It looks like it might be okay. I'm thinking that they might not have much trouble scoring runs this season. But I'm curious how you feel about the teams, maybe specifically with the Diamondbacks and the Padres and their chances of maybe running down L.A. and ending this seven-year run atop the West.
You know, it's funny you bring them up, because I think those are the teams that at least jump out to me. I just, you know, I don't think the Giants are good enough, just talented enough. And I think the Rockies are still going to have trouble with pitching. What I like about the Padres in particular is Paddock, Lamet, Richards, Davies, and then, you know, for the moment, Lucchesi, and I don't, you know, all of their organizational depth, or a lot of it, is in their pitching. I think that Tatis, we've just begun to see how good he's going to be. I think he is going to be a superstar. I love Tommy Pham in that clubhouse. I think Hosmer is due for a bounce back year. I think that's a really sneaky team in terms of wild cards. I just like their vibe. You know, I think they're, you asked about like what gets important. I think bullpens get really important, and I think they're really good there. For the same reason that I picked the Rays to win the AL East, because I just think that teams that can put arms out there are going to benefit. You know, and I think that, look, you know, the Diamondbacks, that was a pretty good team in August and September last year. And if you're looking for, you know, your sort of random 60-game stretch, Diamondbacks, what, 31-22 or something over the last couple months last year? Love Starling Marte. Ketel Marte is, to me, you know, sort of like Tatis in terms of a guy that not a lot of people knew about before last year and fell in love with and can be a really good player. You know, I wonder where the back end of the rotation is. I think you just have to see those guys perform before you sort of completely buy in. But I do think they can hit it. They can, you know, a guy on the team that I just always have liked is Cole Calhoun. Yeah. And if he can be healthy and if he can pass some tests and all that stuff, I think he could be really good in that lineup. I like the Diamondbacks, and I think if the Dodgers stumble at all, I think the Diamondbacks and the Padres could take advantage.
Curious, Tim, some of the Sports Illustrated writers I know had their picks and some of the other national publications, and no one seems to like the Diamondbacks' chances for some reason to win a wild card. I don't know if they're right or wrong, but from a national perspective, and that's where you are, do the Diamondbacks get overlooked too often? Are they underappreciated? Are they disrespected? A word I don't really love to use a lot. But what is sort of the national writer's opinion of the organization?
I think up till now or most recently, just sort of an average team, right? They score runs somewhere in the middle of the National League. I think probably top six or seven last year. Their team ERA is probably right in the middle. I think people are just sort of waiting for them to jump up in one area or the other. I think you see them move some guys. You see him move a Goldschmidt a couple winters back. You see him move a Greinke. And I think there's some assumptions being made. I think people are waiting to see what those things bring. How good can, a Luke Weaver be? How good can the take back from the Astros be? And, you know, I don't think it's so much disrespect as it is just what are they?
Yeah.
You know, when are they going to be what they think they can be? And I think the other part of it is when you finish 21 games behind, the team in your division, people are just, you know, the Dodgers are really good. The sort of the runoff is all the rest of the teams aren't very good. So I don't think that's necessarily accurate, but, you know, sometimes time and place are part of the story of your franchise, right?
Yeah. Tim, we appreciate the time. It's good to catch up. Please stay safe, and we look forward to chatting again down the road.
Enjoyed it, fellas. I'll miss you out of the ballpark this year.
I'll miss you too, man. Always one of my favorite people to see on the road. So stay safe.
Thank you, Tim.
Take care, fellas.
Thanks,
Thank
Tim.
You.
Tim Bye-bye. Brown, one of the really, truly great guys, wonderful guy. And the national baseball writer for Yahoo Sports. On the other end of the spectrum is Ryan Spielborgs. We'll talk to the Rockies broadcaster next. This is the D-backs BP show.
Diamondbacks baseball. The D-backs BP show. Diamondbacks Radio Network.
Well, as part of the program the last several weeks, we have been previewing the D-backs opponents in the National League Western Division. And last but certainly not least is the Colorado Rockies.
Maybe a little least.
Maybe.
No?
No. It's a good rivalry between the Diamondbacks and the Colorado Rockies, I believe. And joining us now is one of our arch rivals. He is former Rockies outfielder and current Rockies broadcaster, both as a color analyst and sideline reporter for AT&T Sports Rocky Mountain. He also is the co-host of the almost as popular as the show two shows before it on MLB Network Radio, Inside Pitch. He is Ryan Spielborgs.
Borgsy, are you reporting from a remote weather station somewhere?
Yeah, we got a weather report going on or what?
Yes, I am. I am reporting from across the street for the last soccer practice of the pre-season baseball. So, and by the way, it is a full-fledged rivalry between myself and Mike Farron, between the Purple People Eaters and America's team. I have an extra small jersey that says Farron on the back to prove it.
Well, Borgsy, I ask you to do this every year, and I think maybe we'll save it for the end. Your Mike Farron imitation is one of my favorite things ever. So Luke has got dueling banjos music standing by. So I think some point in the segment we'd like to do dueling Farrons, if that's okay with you.
All right. As long as it comes down to, like, if we're talking Wade Russell Grand Plot, then we can have a conversation.
But Spilly, it doesn't have to be that way. You can focus on the grit with the team, and they would be really good.
Oh, my God, I didn't realize that's so whiny.
I think
my wife would agree with you. That is, you just nailed me.
That stinks. We are impressed that you've decided to start playing soccer, though, too. So, all right, let's talk about this Rockies team It seems that a lot of it is going to hinge on the success of their pitching staff. And I realize that that seems like it's the conversation every year with the Rockies. But Kyle Freeland, to me, is one of the more interesting guys. Was so good 2 years ago, fourth in the Cy Young in the National League. Last year, he spent a good chunk of the season in AAA. I know he's made some changes. What have you seen from Kyle Freeland? What have you heard about Kyle Freeland that might give the Rockies a little bit of hope this season?
Yeah, so Kyle cleaned up his pitching mechanics, and he used to have a little hiccup in his delivery, like a Clayton Kershaw pause. He took that out, and part of the reason why he just was not able to repeat mechanics, wasn't able to repeat his delivery. To be honest, I don't like it. I don't like it at all because as a hitter, when he was out of the windup, he was hard to time. He was hard to get that with that little, you know, abbreviated stop. It made it a challenge for a hitter's timing. If he had a leg kick, it threw you off. But now he's a lot smoother. He's a lot more fluid. He's able to repeat mechanics. He's a wild card for me. I mean, there's no question. Kyle has, you know, he has what you want in a starter. He wants the baseball. You know, he's a competitor. He's a competitor at heart. I'll put him up against anybody as far as, you know, just tenacity. But I think when you're looking at this Rockies starting rotation and you're looking at a Herman who last year, middle of August when he went on the shelf, it might surprise some people that aren't in Colorado, but Herman was leading the National League in innings pitched and strikeouts. Just goes to show you what type of arm he has, and that's pitching at Coors Field. So there's a lot of, you know, optimism from the front end. John Gray's taking some massive steps forward. John Gray got sent down to the minor leagues 2 years ago, just needed a mental recharge, and it's changed him a lot. And so you have two guys at the front end that I think can do some damage. Kyle's the wild card. If he's able to get inside with the fastball, he has a nice little cut fastball in for righties, and then he can fade it away with a changeup, he'll be fine. If he starts getting beat up again and he's missing location, then that presents some serious issues for the Rockies and the pitching staff as a whole.
Well, Spilly, I know that Bud Black the other day said it would be Marquez and Gray and then Freeland, and then they'll see after that. My question for you is about Nolan Arenado. And one of the biggest stories, not just with the Rockies, but one of the biggest stories in baseball this spring was his apparent and very public dissatisfaction with what Jeff Breidich had done and sort of the lack of activity in the offseason. That story seemed to have gone away in the middle of the pandemic. What is Arenado's relationship like with the front office today?
I can't speak personally about what his personal relationship is with the front office, but I know talking to him, it feels like water under the bridge. I mean, time has healed some wounds. I do know he looks at this thing as a 60-game sprint and likes his chances. He's been very public about saying that. I think it boils down to, you guys, and you know this, I mean, you're always going to have, depending on where you work, maybe you don't see eye to eye with a coworker or an executive. That's fine.
No,
that
never happens over here, Spilly, ever.
Okay, so you guys live in paradise. let me know who the EP is so I can come move over there. But, I mean, in general, look, you're always going to have, when you're a competitor and you have a career, I never had the trajectory like Nolan. I think today on MLB.com, they compared his first couple seasons against Ernie Banks. Like, there was never a comparison of Spielberg versus Ernie Banks, unless it was maybe we ate the same amount of hot dogs in one day. Like, that's about it. But Nolan's on a Hall of Fame trajectory right now based on the gold gloves and what he's been capable of doing. And when you have that skill set, you demand something different. You're not the 25th guy on the roster. You're not the 30th guy. You are somebody that is a generational type for our franchise, for the Rockies franchise. And nobody wants to be on a team that stinks. And last year, the Rockies team was not good. And I think it's fair, even though you look at the Rockies, they were a handful of teams that go back-to-back postseasons. That's not good enough if you're that type of player. You know, everybody wants to have Jeter's career. Where you, what was it, 19 seasons and only once did he not get to the playoffs, and it was his last year. Everybody wants to be Jeter. Everybody wants to go to playoffs every single year like the Dodgers. We know it's not that way, but I guess if you're that good, you can kind of demand it. So that's where the conversation was really between Jeff and Nolan, both very, very competitive and maybe not seeing eye to eye on the moves that were made.
Spilly, talk a little bit about the bullpen. Obviously, a couple of years ago, they made some big moves to bring some people in. They've let Brian Shaw and Jake McGee go since and recently. What's the evolution of the bullpen right now?
So the bullpen, to me, is going to be interesting to pay attention to. I think every team in this sprint has the benefit of arms, which we've never seen before. I've never seen 30 teams tied at All-Star break for first place or last place, however you want to look at it. I'm a glass half full type guy, so I'll be optimistic. But when you think about a bullpen and you think about the arms and a hitter's meeting that's going through potentially 8 or 9 bullpen arms, some teams might even carry 10 if you're Tampa Bay, you're up against it's a challenge. And so what the Rockies did, what was interesting, getting rid of Jake McGee and Brian Shaw, I don't think Bud Black had confidence in using them in any scenario. If you're in a plus scenario, because you're not going to see starters lasting more than 5 or 6 innings the first couple cycles through the rotation, you're going to rely heavily upon multiple inning eaters and stoppers. And if you don't have guys on your roster that are able to get outs or pitch an entire inning by themselves, then what are you doing on a roster? And I think that's what the Rockies came up against. It makes a lot more sense with the pandemic because you're now prorating just 60 games versus the entire 162. So you're already getting a discount on some of these big salaries. It was the right thing to do for the Rockies, was to move in a new direction.
Another one with Ryan Spielborg's Rockies broadcaster here on the D-backs BP show. Which young hitter has a bigger impact on the 2020 Rockies this year, Brendan Rodgers or Sam Hilliard?
Sam Hilliard. And maybe not offensively like what Brendan Rodgers is capable of doing. Sam Hilliard, I'm not saying he's a defensive whiz, but he does present the Rockies with some athleticism. And with the DH, I think this has been one of the bigger stories for the Rockies, is that you can pull a Charlie Blackmon out of right field now and give him days as a DH. He can be a little bit more defensive heavy at Coors Field, where you can put a David Dahl in right, a Sam Hilliard in center, and potentially a Tapia in left field, and that gives you pretty good coverage of the outfield. So I think Sam Hilliard across the board, because of the defensive abilities that he gives the Rockies now, and even in today's scrimmage against Texas, Hilliard's in there manning center field. There's a lot of athleticism there. He's 6'5". I mean, he covers a lot of ground, and you guys have been to Coors Field enough. It's not the homers that gets you. It's the walks and the little, you know, bleeders that land in front of the outfielders that gets you at Coors Field. So Sam will certainly help one aspect of it. He doesn't pitch, so he doesn't help the walk aspect. But Sam will have a much bigger impact than Brendan Rodgers.
You mentioned Tapia, Spilly. I was reading the other day Bud Black just raving about him and how he's developed and maybe learning some patience up there at the plate. He's got all the tools every time I see him. He can hit, got surprising power. Obviously, he can run. He's a very intriguing player. And from everything I've read about the Rockies, they're expecting him to have a bit of a breakout season this year. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, Tapia is interesting. I don't think you can change stripes on a Tiger. He's still going to be an aggressive hitter. He's going to be a chase guy. I'm fine with that. He does have elite bat-to-ball skills. I mean, he hits balls off the plate that I haven't seen. He just has a lot of ability to hit the baseball in strange spots. But that being said, I would love to see a little bit more discipline. I'd like to see him be a little more efficient with his routes in the outfield. I mean, I've been critical of Tapia because I think his skill set lends itself to be an impact guy. You're also past the stage now where he's out of options, where, you know, how many times do you want to see him miss a cutoff man or, you know, take a bad route on a baseball? At some point, you know, as a player, you got to grow up. And I think that's in general what the entire organization is looking at him. It's time for him to take a step forward. You know, yeah. It really, he does have that skill set to be a difference maker. And if he's able to put it together, yeah. I mean, you're talking about an outfield now with a David Dahl, who's an all-star, Blackman, who's an all-star. I'm not saying Tapia is going to be an all-star this year, but he certainly has. He has a very special skill set that could make him, you know, a very impact player this year.
All right. I guess now's the time, right?
Yeah.
Let's Billy throw the show to break as Mike Farron. Can we do that?
Well, I got one quick question. What's the facial hair status of Spilly? I know you went through a lot of evolutions in the quarantine period.
Yes. Are you still homeless?
I had a great quarantine beard that was retired by the wife, who you can understand what wives hold back from, and so I shaved the beard for that. But yeah, so Ryan Spielberg and the Colorado Rockies are going to be an amazing challenge for the Diamondbacks this year. Coming up next, we'll get into more power ranking of advanced analytics that you need. This is Diamondbacks Talk.
Spot on. Do you want to throw a Spilly his way? Throw a Spilly his way.
Thanks so much for having me. They're going to win the whole World Series this year. I'm going to be so happy. I'm going to eat orange slices at the end of the day.
Borgsy, yeah, I love
Pauly
you.
Pauly Shore.
You sound like Pauly Shore. That's outstanding.
Like. That's, Erica says hi. Best stay safe, and I will talk to you soon, my friend.
Love you, buddy. See you guys.
You too, bud.
Thanks, Spilly.
Ryan Spielberg.
He's the best. Hopefully everything's going okay up there on Ice Station Zebra.
I thought it was Jim Cantora. Who's the guy?
Yeah, he's out there standing waist high in water, getting umbrella blown away.
Odd to have suburban Denver be in hurricane season, but, you know, 2020 has been bonkers. So
that's the thing you miss about travel, those batting practice tornadoes that come through Coors Field at 5:30 before first pitch.
Why do I get the sense you were being facetious about missing that?
No, that really happens. Wait, the sky was blue a minute ago. Why is it black? That doesn't look good.
I'm like Leo. I'm a romantic. I'll miss sunsets at Coors Field with the
When the weather is nice, it is spectacular. It's a beautiful area.
When you're with the
right people, like we are, Mike, when we get to enjoy that sunset, it's
down. Yeah. You mean down on where the radio booth is?
Yeah,
away
you don't
from
come
TV?
Down there at sunset. A lot of times Leo will walk up to the front, just rest his head on Tom's shoulder, and really soak in the beauty and the grandeur that is Denver.
You guys it's like Walt Whitman, you two.
By the way, we'll still be affected by that weather, just we'll be being affected while we're in Phoenix.
Yeah,
that's true.
That is true.
How about the irony of that, being here in Phoenix yet stuck in a weather delay at Colorado?
I mean, pitch dark Chase Field.
Mike literally just shrugged on Zoom. This is radio.
I don't know what to tell you. Some of us have had to sit out rain delay in the studio before. I realize this is all new to you. So
it is.
Maybe we'll make some predictions on the season coming up.
I have a prediction.
What's that?
Pain.
How did I know that you were going to go to the lowest common denominator?
Hey,
our final
Lang.
Our final segment of the off-season version or pandemic D-backs PP show.
Gird your loins. This could get emotional.
In a moment. So, Luke, don't cry.